Let us repeat this once again because it's of such tremendous value that if we understand these four words, then we will have no trouble understanding the noble truths and understanding life. There is nature, the natural law, duty in accordance with natural law, and the results in accordance with duty. Just these four words, we should be very careful to remember them and understand them. Nature, law, duty, result. Nature, law, duty, result. Please give these four words your careful attention. These truths of nature, all these meanings or aspects of nature, must be studied, must be learned right here. We can't learn about nature from books, from listening to lectures, from thinking, from philosophy, from speculation, from reasoning. None of these things will allow us to actually know nature in its various manifestations. But if we just study life itself, everything is right there. All we need to know is right there. If we study the body is an aspect, is part of nature. And this body is subject to physical laws, to natural laws. The body is under the power of these various natural laws. And then the body must always act, always has a duty to perform according to those laws. And then there will be a result according to that duty, either happiness or suffering, pleasure or pain, always arising depending on how the body does its duty. So all four of these can be discovered right here, even in the body, but never in books or in lectures or by reasoning. The Buddha himself said that all the truths we need to know, everything we need to know, can be discovered here in this body and nowhere else. All the truths we must know can be found right here in this body. But it must be a living body. If the body's dead, well then forget it. You can't learn very much from it. But when the body is alive, when there's life here, then all the truths can be discovered. When we mean alive, that means there is the ability to experience. There's feeling, there's sensation, there's thought, there's perception. With this living body, with feeling, experience, perception, thought, in that we can learn every truth that we need to know. The nature that we must discover in this body, it's not really different than the nature that's all across the universe. But that nature out there, we don't really need to study. We just need to study the nature within this body. The nature of all the atoms and the clusters of atoms, the various elements that are brought together, compounded together to make up this body. This nature in here is what we need to know. The nature all over the universe, it's a little bit too much. And then with this body, there are various actions. There are physical actions and movements. There is speech. There is thought, memory, and all kinds of mental processes. All of these are included in the word nature. These are all included in the truth of nature that we ought to understand. We like to call it nama and rupa, or mind and body. So take a good look at it. In nama, in mind, how many different things and aspects and processes are going on? And in the body, in rupa, how many different things are happening? All of these together are nature, are the pure nature of life that is to be understood. Wherever there is nature, there is the law of nature right there as well. So in this body, the body is always under the control, under the power of the law of nature. Everything the body does is governed by the law of nature. And then the nature of the mind is the same. The mind, everything the mind does, all of the mind and its manifestations are governed by the law of nature. The body is subject to physical laws, and then the mind to mental laws. Wherever there is nature, there is natural law. The mind specifically is subject to the natural law that we call paticca samuppada, dependent origination, that the mind works like this and like this and like this. It doesn't work in another way. That's how things are. That's the law of the mind. So anywhere we find nature, there we can find also natural law. So then there is this law of nature that things must be impermanent. If we observe the mind, for example, we'll discover the law that it all must be impermanent, constantly changing, unsatisfactory or oppressive and not self. Seeing that everything that must arise through certain conditions and then must cease through the ceasing of conditions. This is the law of nature that we can find everywhere. So in the law of nature, there are two levels. The first level is that the law of nature is like this. It's not something else. It's like this. And then the level that things must happen according to the law of nature. There's just no other way. The law of nature is like this, and everything must happen in line or according to the law of nature. We need to look as carefully as we can until we see that the law of nature is what the law of nature is like, exactly what it is like. And then further to see that it controls us. It forces us to be like this, for things to happen like this. We must look until we see that we're completely under the power of the law of nature. If we look closely enough, carefully enough to see this, then it is not at all difficult to understand Dhamma. And when there is this law of nature that controls us, that forces things to be in a certain way or to happen in certain ways, then life must respond to that. Human beings must respond to that, and that response is called duty. In Thai, it's called nāti, which translates duty. In India, even way before the Buddha, when people first became intelligent to understand this duty of life. They call it Dhamma. So the word Dhamma is very ancient, going back, way back into the beginnings of Indian civilization. They've known this word Dhamma, or duty. This necessary response of life, especially of the human being, to the power of the law of nature. We can't really say who the first human being was that came to understand this word duty or Dhamma. We don't know who the first person was, but there had to be someone who observed nature very carefully until they realized that there was this duty. So someone somewhere first understood the duty and understood it so well that they saw without this duty, without doing that duty, that we must die. And then since this understanding of duty has been passed along and it's the understanding has developed and grown until the time of the Buddha, when the understanding of Dhamma, of duty, was taken to its highest level and has not been improved upon since. This understanding of Dhamma, of duty, has been developing with humanity for a long time. And it's the thing that must be done. Otherwise, we will die. So Dhamma, duty, is something we have to have. We must have Dhamma in this sense of being the duty. If we ask, well then who established or set up or laid down this duty? We can answer according to the various approaches that we already have. In the theistic religions, then we must say that God established this duty. It was God who laid down the duty. But in Buddhism, we just say that nature, that Dhamma, that nature is what set forth or established this duty. So please don't fall into any arguments or start fighting about who it was that established this duty. We need all of us just to study and come to understand this duty. Those who like to say that God is the one who laid down the duty, fine. But we would suggest to you that in saying so, one ought to understand that it's the law of nature that is God, or that what is meant by God here is the law of nature. In Buddhism, this is quite clear, that duty comes from the law of nature, that it's the law of nature that stipulates that if this duty is not done, we die. Without duty, it must die. Without duty, it must die. This is something we can observe anywhere we look. In people, if there isn't any duty, then people die. Or in animals, if there isn't duty, then they die. Even in trees, if trees don't perform their duty, then they die. Even in the smallest living things, even in a single cell, if that cell doesn't do its duty, it dies. So from the simplest forms of life to the most complex, all life must have duty. Without this duty, life dies. This duty, this Dhamma, is absolutely necessary. It's so necessary, there's no even questioning of the fact once we've observed it. Every cell in the body has its duty. And then when the cells gather together into groups, each of the collective groups, or each of these groups has its collective duty. And so when the cells form together and form the blood, the muscles, the bones, all of these have their duty. And if these duties are not performed, then the cells die, the groups of cells die, the body dies. These things come together and form hands, feet, ears, and all the parts and organs of the body. And each of these has its duty. If these duties are not done, if these duties don't exist, then the thing dies. And so life in all aspects, on all levels, from the basic little parts of the cells, and even the little ingredients of the cells, the ribosomes and nucleus and all that, up through the groups of cells, and then the organs that are collected together to form a living being, a life. All of these must perform their duty. Life must do its duty, or it will die. Without Dhamma, life dies. Life, we cannot survive without Dhamma. Here we can distinguish two aspects, or two levels of duty. There's the physical duty, and there's spiritual duty. For the body and all its parts, they all have their physical duty, their physical kind of duty. And then within the mind, in the mind's ability to know the truth, there is the spiritual duty. Now, some people would also add mental, physical, mental, and spiritual. But really what we call mental, all the mental processes, all the things that psychology studies, all of these are connected with the body, closely associated with the body, concerned with the body. And so what is generally called mental can be included in the physical. But then there's the spiritual, which is distinct. And so there are these two kinds of duty, the physical duty and the spiritual duty. Both of these must be done correctly. If these two kinds of duty are not performed correctly, then the living being dies. So we need to pay attention to and study these two kinds of duty and learn how to do them correctly. It's quite marvelous that the physical duty never stops. The physical duties have to be done constantly, all the time. But when it comes to the mind, the spiritual duty, it's different. Sometimes we can take a rest. Sometimes it stops. The spiritual duty doesn't have to be done constantly. But there are these two kinds of duty for us to know, the physical and the spiritual. Something that you've heard about already, that is the Noble Eightfold Path. This is the spiritual duty. And so we'll discuss this later as we discuss the Four Noble Truths. In Pali, there's another word, sammatta. What this word means, even if I can spell it, S-A-M-M-A-T-A, with a line over the last A. The other one is spelled differently. this samatha, samatha means, da means state of being or state. Samma means correct, appropriate, proper. So this word means the state of being correct, the state of correctness, the state of propriety, of rightness. Both duties must have this quality of rightness, this state of being correct. Both the physical duty and the spiritual duty must have this quality of samatha, samatha, this state of being correct. And then life doesn't have to die. With these, if both duties are right, then there is no death. Now when we say correct or right, we have to ask, right according to what? Right in regard to what? We can say that the physical duty must be right according to the things we need to get. Physically, there are things we need. There are legitimate needs. And so it must be correct according to those needs. Or we could, to put it more simply, just, it must be right so that there's no death. It's right if we don't die. That's the physical duty. The spiritual duty must be right regarding Nibbana. The spiritual duty has to fit with Nibbana, has to be correct in terms of or regarding Nibbana, which is to not die spiritually. There's a physical death and a physical survival, and then there's spiritual death and spiritual survival. To be correct regarding Nibbana is to live spiritually. When businessmen are correct, they get money. When politicians are correct, they get power. And when Buddhists are correct, they get Nibbana. So then ask yourselves, what do you want? So you've come to study and practice Buddhism. That means you ought to want the thing that Buddhism has to offer. And the only thing that Buddhism has to offer is Nibbana, the quenching of all problems. This word Nibbana is a very difficult one to explain. Many of you have heard it before, either the Pali word Nibbana or the Sanskrit word Nirvana. The same word in two different languages. Some of you maybe have even heard that Nibbana or Nirvana means death. Please be very careful and understand this important word correctly. We need to get the correct meaning of Nibbana. We can say that Nibbana is the quenching of everything undesirable, the quenching of everything inappropriate. Literally, the word Nibbana means cool. It's a quenching of heat. When the heat is quenched, the way thirst is quenched with a drink of water, then there is coolness. We're talking specifically about mental coolness, spiritual coolness. We're not talking about death. Actually, death isn't coolness. Death is cold. If the body was cool, that's very nice. And so coolness, nibbana, has nothing to do with death. It's just the quenching of all heat, all problems, spiritually. Then now we can come to the fourth aspect or meaning of nature, of Dhamma. And this is the result according to how the duty has been done. The result in line with the way duty has been performed. And the most complete and perfect result is simply Nibbana. The perfect result is perfect Nibbana. The cooling of all problems, all heat, all strife, all suffering within the mind. This is the result that Buddhism is offering specifically. However, it's possible to speak on lower, more mundane levels if we wish. And the can use the word result in terms of money. For example, when one's economic duty is done properly, or physical health, when those duties are done properly, and family security, when those duties are done properly, and then happiness, when one does that duty correctly. These mundane, these ordinary worldly meanings of result can also be used. But the highest meaning of the result according to the doing of duty is Nibbana. When all problems are quenched, when the mind has no problems, no heat. We probably can't use the word grace in this context, because in Buddhism we talk only about nature. Grace comes from God. But here, using the word result is something that comes straight from nature, out of the law of nature, and if the way duty is done according to that law of nature. So we're unable to use the word grace here. We can just put God aside for now and see that just if the duty is done correctly, the result will happen immediately, naturally. There's no need for any grace. And so now we are able to understand the four meanings of the word nature or Dhamma. There's the body of nature, the law of nature, the duty according to the law, and the result according to the duty. All four of these together make up nature. And we can take this to be the ultimate truth, or the absolute truth of all nature. So we've used up more than an hour to discuss these meanings of nature. Because if we understand nature in these ways, it's quite easy to understand the noble truths. If we don't understand nature, if we don't take a good look at nature, it will be very difficult to understand the noble truths, and most people will give up before they actually understand them. So we've taken the time to go to look at nature like this, look at the ultimate truth of nature, because this is an excellent introduction to the noble truths. With this introduction, it should not be difficult for us as we go on to explore the noble truths. So we've used up more than an hour. That is all of today's talk on this, for this introduction. We'll carry on later. And for now, we'll stop.